Hey, guys.
Get out of here. You don't want to play.
Introducing the Pokemon trading card game for Game Boy. Yeah. You can learn all the secrets and strategies you'll need to become a true Pokemon Master Trainer, rated E for everyone.
Ha! A Thunder Punch combined with the paralyzing attack move makes Electabuzz arguably the best all-around Pokemon in the game.
Limited edition card inside. Gotta catch them all.
Hey, folks. Welcome to another glorious episode of Nerd with Dre and Jeff. I am your co-host, Jeff May, and...
I am your other co-host, Dre Alvarez, found most places nerd numbers. But Jeff, you got to keep going on the intro. We got a special surprise for this show.
Absolutely, we do. I was going to get to that. I can't introduce two people at the same time, and it would just be a cacophony of words. We are joined by a fantastic guest, one of my very, very good friends. I do a lot of recreational sports with. She's a super, super funny comedian, an impressive editor as well, and just a very, very great person. And a Pokemon player. Let's give it up for the amazing Elise Golgowski.
Yes. Hi, I'm Elise Golgowski, and I'm really happy to be here. I love Pokemon, so.
I was very excited. Yeah. I put out an APB. So there's a background to this where, and this is something about the show. Before we do into that, Elise, tell us more about you.
I'm working on Don't Tell Comedy right now. So if you're a big fan of comedy and you want to see some stand-up, go check out their YouTube channel. Or their Instagram. I've been editing all those sets, so that's really exciting.
Oh, you're the one that edits those.
Yeah, now I am.
Those are making careers.
They are. Yeah, I already had a career, but whatever.
There are people that are like that have like 1,200 followers on like Instagram, and then the Don't Tell shows up with their video, and then it's like, and now I have 19,000 followers.
Yeah, it's insane the reach that they have. Kyle really built something special. Like my friend was telling me that it's more beneficial to book a taping with Don't Tell than it is with Comedy Central, because nobody will watch it on Comedy Central, but everyone's going to watch the Don't Tell thing.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know how they get it out there, but they get it out there.
I haven't done a Don't Tell since they started recording them.
Really?
Yeah. No, I used to do San Diego a lot. A lot of fun. But that's really, really great. And you are absolutely fantastic. And this was actually really exciting. I put an APB out for people that played Pokemon because I had a lot of people that expressed interest in doing this show. And I was like, great. Well, how long did you play? And they were like, well, no, I just collected the cards. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah, but this is about a game. And it's important that you experience. But like, apparently, and this is the insane thing, a majority of Pokemon collectors do not play this game.
Oh, yeah. Jeff, I gotta cut in with that.
Yeah.
Because I'll give a backstory. So you did much better at guest booking. So as some background, you, Elise, and then, of course, the listeners, this is part 3 in the 3rd series of Nerd. So we do trilogies. And for episode 1, you won't be shocked to discover this. We're going to talk Star Wars CCG. Jeff and I have a bunch of experience. And just like midway through, Jeff's like, oh, yeah. And it turns out I was an amazing player and general manager. And like, basically, you know, you seen that movie Moneyball? Not shocking. He's like, I basically did Moneyball with Star Wars CCG. And I was like, all right, I'm going to let Jeff talk and put my stories about bad collecting over here. That was episode 1. Episode 2, I brought my friend Brian Foster. And he did the same thing where he was just like, oh, yeah. And, you know, I just randomly won major tournaments. So sorry to set the bar high. We got to that. Then Jeff and I got to Pokemon and we're like, did you play? And I have a binder full. Jeff's not wrong. And my original thing is I thought these were my brothers.
That's
and I
was a censored like, binder because
yeah, it's censored binder. You cannot, dicks, yeah. You can't see the Pokemon there. I texted my brother and was like, hey, I think you played because I have all your old cards. You want to be on the show? And he's like, aren't those your cards? So apparently my brother and I just amassed a bunch of Pokemon cards without ever playing. So I'm definitely curious. I agree. Like that story holds up. And I'm glad Jeff had at least one friend that played.
Yeah, I've tried to play the game. I tried to learn the game. And where it really came down to was I was at somebody's, I was staying at another comedian's house. And they had a child that collected the cards. And I was like, oh, do you play? And they're like, no. I'm like, well, maybe we could learn together. Like I was trying to do like real like fun uncle energy of like, maybe we could both learn how to. That kid couldn't have been less goddamn interested in learning how to play this game. And I'm just like, well, what do you, why do you, and then it's like, well, it was like a 7-year-old.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are you flipping these? You're a child. So I really want to come down, because we're going to talk about a little bit about like the history of the card game and everything like that, and where it came through, and it's really weird. The history is just convoluted. But Elise, I would love to know like your history with the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started out like, I think in elementary school, my friends and I, we loved Pokemon, the TV show.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when the cards came out too. So we started off collecting them. But, you know, you'd buy a deck, you know, like in a box and stuff. So it's already like a playable deck for you to have with 60 cards in it. And then you'd get like a coin to start the round off with. And then like those little smashed marbles were the hit counter or hit points and stuff. And I tried playing with some of my friends, but it's so funny, like starting out, the game seems a little confusing, but once you get the hang of it and like play a few rounds, you really, you know, it's really pretty straightforward and actually a lot of fun. So I would try to play with them in person, but no one really had the attention span to finish a game.
I've found out that they're actually very short too. The games can run generally 10 minutes, right?
Yeah, it depends. Like sometimes a game is really, because it can be over whether if you draw all your prizes, and you can play a game with 2 prizes up to 6.
Yes.
Or it can also end when nobody has any more benched Pokemon, you know?
Yes.
So if they only have 1, I've lost quite a few rounds that way, which was bullshit.
By getting knocked out, basically?
Yeah, knocked out, and I just couldn't find another basic Pokemon in my, like when you draw a card, I just never had one. So then I didn't have any Pokemon on my bench. And then I had like a Rattata on, you know, playing, which only has like 30 HP.
Yeah.
And then it just gets knocked out with like a quick attack or something. And it's like, that's such bullshit.
Wait, can I ask a strategy question? Why like, are there rules about which, like with your friends that you were playing, which one you're allowed to? Because I mean, even just the reason I never did the card game is my 2 cents would be the actual games and even like things like Pokemon Go. It's like, mm-hmm. I would say this game is an amazingly good simulation of that. And so that's probably why I never got into it. It's like, if I want to play Pokemon, I'll play that.
Yeah.
Why would you ever have a Rattata in in your deck? Was there benefit to like drawing it or something? Or
yeah. So, I mean, when I played the Pokemon video game too, the blue and the red and yellow too, I bought all of that, even though it's basically the same game. Yeah. but I would only I'd collect all the Pokemon, but the only Pokemon that I would play with were like the cute ones that I liked, you know? And the card game gave me more of an appreciation for the different Pokemon because of like their moves and stuff. Like,
that's
so
similar to me with Star Wars.
Okay.
Got a bunch of nerds on this show. But anyway, proceed.
Yeah, right. You have an appreciation for Mace Windu that you didn't have before.
Well, unfortunately, that's right when the card game ended, was when the Mace card came out.
Wow, so he just ruined the whole Star Wars universe.
Ironically, Wizards of the Coast,
okay,
for a very short period, mm-hmm. had the 3 biggest titles in card games, because they had bought Star Wars. They got the rights to Star Wars and ruined the game. But
because
they had Magic the Gathering, they were distributing Pokemon, and they were doing that. But yeah, I would assume these all work together, and building from that. So I'm gonna kind of merge some history in with that, okay, because of what you were just saying.
I had another point that I wanted to.
Oh, go ahead.
So
go for it. Go for that point.
Well, because like answering your question, like why would you have a Rattata? Yeah, I think it's called Rattata or something. Why would you have that out? Playing the card game gave me an appreciation for that because, you know, it just seemed like it's just a rat Pokemon, whatever. But it's actually really good for the card game because it only takes 1 energy, and it's any type of energy to attack. And when you attack, your starting move, it's already 20. It's like a 20 damage that it does, which is pretty high for a basic Pokemon, especially with just a 1 energy card attached to it. And then if you you can evolve it on your next turn to Raticate.
Oh, and by the way, to correct, I'm cheating using the Pokemon Go app. Okay. It's Rattata. Don't want Rattata. That extra T on the end. Don't want the nerds coming after us in the comments.
I know. Especially because I'm a girl, too. So I'll be like, this bitch doesn't know Pokemon.
She's a liar.
Yeah. But so anyway, when you evolve it, a lot of the evolution, second stage Pokemon, you need more. They require more energy cards for their attacks. But not Raticate. It's still just one energy, but your hit points increase like a bunch. I think it's like maybe 70 or so. Maybe it's just 60. But it's like an substantial amount. So, you know, you're not going to get one-hitted. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that is, to tie it back to our last episode with Magic, you would consider that to be more, that would be like what we would call a weenie deck, where you would have these low power, like these not particularly strong, but you can get them out fast and they can do fast damage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of one of those things, because so we're going to tie back to history a little bit. So the Pokemon card game essentially started in Japan in 1997. And what I found out, and this is Pokemon itself is a split copyright. So Pokemon is run in conjunction by Nintendo, Game Freak, and Creatures Inc. Right? And so they're all putting this out here. And Pokemon doesn't have a distributor in America the way it does in Japan. So they finally get one. And ironically, they get Wizards of the Coast. One of the reasons they get Wizards of the Coast is because Wizards of the Coast had been doing Magic the Gathering for about 6 years at that point in time. And they actually used Magic the Gathering as their template to build this game. So Pokemon was created sort of as a, how can we make our property like Magic the Gathering?
Mm-hmm.
So they brought Magic the Gathering cards over to Japan to show, here's what we want to do. So it would make sense to go to these. They have the infrastructure. They know how to print. They know how to distribute. They know they have the channels. This is really great. So they did that, and they stuck with Wizards of the Coast, from, what is essentially 1999 until about 2003, to which then Nintendo USA, basically took over. Right. So what we have here in 1999 is sort of a resurgence of their three Japanese sets that had come out. You have what's called Base, which is going to be your general start. That's the one with the Charizard, Venusaur, and Blastoise, different packages, right? The little wrappers on it. Then we had Jungle, then we had Fossil, and that completed the 150 base Pokemon. You weren't going to get to 151 until Pokemon the movie comes out, which is, and then you get your Muse. Not like your Muse, M-U-S-E, like somebody to help you create something, but Mew. The little Mew, who, and Mew's essential existence was to obliterate Mewtwo because it was like an overpowered card. Now, in the beginning, the game was relatively broken, primarily because you could win the game. Everybody was winning the game with two cards.
Mm-hmm.
They were using two Pokemon cards, Hitmonchan and Electabuzz, or Electabuzz. These two cards basically just beat the shit out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So then as we start moving forward, you'll get smaller cards that actually can negate these cards. Cards like, I think it was something like somebody's, like a Magikarp or like a,
really?
There's something where it's like, there are cards whose functions are essentially only to negate characters like Hitmonchan. Because Hitmonchan was, much to my happiness, a boxer Pokemon.
Yeah, I was going to say that was another Pokemon card that I really like playing with, was really easy because he just needed one fighting energy for a starting move. And then once you build it up to three, he can like knock him out.
Yeah. Yeah. So he has a jab, which does 20 damage for one. And then he does a special punch. He has a high hit points, or I believe they call them heal points there. Okay. I might be getting a little bit ahead of us. But
by the way, sorry, I'm going to keep us in the weeds, Jeff. I'll throw this at us. A Pokemon Go player, Hitmonchamp is like the broken one. That's what, like,
oh,
from the meta perspective,
yeah,
is the best one to beat gyms and a lot of bosses. Like,
it would be so funny if on Pokemon Go, Hitmonchan only would show up outside of boxing gyms. And it would be over a person who's beating the shit out of you. No, just me? Okay.
No.
No, all right. So we have originally in Pokemon, we have six types of energy. So you have energy cards, technically seven if you want to talk about colorless. But we have six main types of energy. Grass, fire, water, lightning, psychic, and fighting. There are other energies that are going to be produced later, such as metal, dragon, fairy, darkness, some that are going to come out, exist, and then disappear, which I think was called crystal or something like that. Like, it's, they keep adding to that, but you'll notice it's very Magic the Gathering. Mm-hmm. Energy is like mana, but instead of using lands, you get the cards themselves. It's a simplified version of Magic the Gathering, essentially. So naturally, Wizards of the Coast and Nintendo and all these massive number of companies are going to be working together to do this. And so what happens is because of the cartoon. So Elise, you were actually the target demographic for this. This cartoon comes out in the, the late 90s, non-union, by the way. It's you can hear more that with the episode of my old show with Veronica Taylor, who was voice of Ash from Pokemon, who she's a good friend. And she also did my New York Comic Con panel. So you can see both of those, which I'm going to get her back on the show. I'm going to try to get her on a new episode of Jeff Has Cool Friends for some nerd synergy here. But so what we have here now is we have this cartoon and it becomes a massive success. I believe it was syndicated through Kids WB on Saturday mornings in general. I believe they put it right in conjunction with The New Adventures of Batman and Robin. So they were like, who can we appeal to? Kids that are watching Batman are going to want to watch Pokemon. And they were right. Mm-hmm. So what you end up having is in 1999, you have an all-out blitz. You have tournaments starting as early as June 1999. And Wizards of the Coast has all of the avenues to get into this. They know, like card shops and comic shops are still doing relatively well at this time. Comic shops have dipped really hard, but like a lot of these trading card shops, Magic the Gathering is doing great. You know, like, this is great. Wizards of the Coast is just like, well, shit, we're doing amazing. They have their own magazine where they can you know, promote Pokemon. Now, on top of that, they also are doing tournaments across every single Toys R Us store in America. And incentivizing people to go to every tournament. Did you ever play in tournaments, Elise?
I never did, no.
Did you? It was so. Were you playing mostly, like what we call schoolyard play?
Basically, yeah. And then, like, when no one would play with me, I got the Game Boy game, the Pokemon trading card game.
Really? Oh, this is awesome!
Yeah,
how good was that?
That's like, oh my god, I love it. I mean, I broke out my Game Boy just to review it, and I've been playing it nonstop. It's so much fun.
I'm going to pull the curtain back a little bit here. I was going through Elise's Instagram, and you posted that, and I replied as a story. I was like, oh hell yeah. Like, I was very excited. Like, you were into this. You were like, I'm doing this show. I'm going to do this thing I love and bring it back. And then your next slide, probably like an hour and a half later, was just, I've gotten more DMs from dudes about this than any thirst trap I've ever posted.
No, 100%. Like, I posted it, and then 30 minutes later, I went to check my Instagram, and I had over 20 inbox messages, all from guys being like, hell yeah, this is awesome. I love that game. That game was hard, and so many things.
Look at that.
Like, okay, great.
You're like, thanks. Thanks for appreciating me for my video games.
Yeah. Basically.
So how does that, let's do a tangent. How does that game work? Is it?
No,
go ahead.
So the game, it's kind of like Pokemon almost, where you're just a young kid and you have a mentor who's a scientist teaching you how to play the Pokemon trading card game. And you go to different gyms, and every gym, it's like specific, you know, there's the psychic gym, a fighting gym, so on. Science, there's a science gym too. So basically you just go around collecting Pokemon cards. After you beat somebody, you usually get two booster packs. Yeah. And then there's like a, you know, a gym leader that you have to defeat, and you get like a badge. And then every single badge, you can take it back to the laboratory and put it into a machine, and you unlock different decks, Pokemon playing like decks. Yeah, that you can customize.
That seems like a lot of information for a small cartridge.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Actually, I'm so embarrassed. I had no idea you could unlock all those different Pokemon decks until I was playing it last night. And I went into the laboratory, like, went into one of the machines and turned it on. It's like, would you like to insert your medal? And I was like, what?
You're like,
I had no idea.
What?
I've been playing with Charmander and friends, like, the whole time without changing my deck up or trying to build a new deck.
Were you able to beat the whole game with just the initial deck, though?
Yeah.
So you're a master. Like, that's like, you know, that'd be like a speed run. You could go on Twitch and do that. Be like, you know, I'm going to beat the game using only a Rattata or Rattata. Yeah, however you
say
it.
Oh my God. Yeah. Now you're saying it. It's like the scat version of the Pokemon, right? Rattata. Anyway. I don't know. It, cause like it keeps track of how long you've been playing it. And I haven't played it since I was like probably like early middle school. So I even like forgot about my whole username was Panda. And I was like, oh my God, I remember that. But I don't know if I'd be able to do a speed run of that, because I clocked in like 10 hours or so. It already less like on the thing. Now it says 16. I've been playing it for a very long time. But yeah. Oh, and then afterwards you go to like, you know how the original Pokemon game, you have the Elite Four that you battle at the end to get like the legendary Pokemon or whatever. So they have legendary Pokemon cards that you can win at the end after you beat their version of Elite Four, which is like somebody that uses like a card deck that's like fire based, and then there's a lightning based and things like that.
So I'm currently, because as I was going through, I did a count, and I'm not 100% sure if I counted exactly correctly, but this is a rough estimate that there are about 111 different sets of Pokemon cards.
111 sets?
111 expansions or base sets that were sold. So you can get 111 different packs of cards.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we see that initial run that we come through here where it's the original series is base Jungle Fossil, base 2, Rocket, Gym Heroes, Gym Challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Then Wizards of the Coast loses the license, and then it gets wild. We're talking like there's EX series, Diamond. So there's the original series, the Neo series, which contains Neo Genesis, Neo Discovery, Neo Revelation, and Neo Destiny. Unknown, E series, EX series, Diamond and Pearl series, Platinum series, Heart Gold, Soul Silver series. There's Black and White. Then there's XY. And there's like tons of subsets through here. There's 12 XYs. There's Sun and Moon, which we get 12. But there are some that are like 11.5. So it's not even just 12. There's more. Then we have Sword and Shield, which has, you know, 12 and a half subsets, and we're currently in Scarlet and Violet.
Well, so to clarify, this is an amazing ecosystem and infrastructure if we're going to stick on the history thing, because of course the game is released in 96, the first one, which was
in Japan,
was Red and Green, and then that got transferred to, and then I think they released a Blue, and then when we got them in the States it was just Red and Blue, and then we did get Yellow where you got Pikachu, because of course Pikachu became the face thanks to the cartoon show.
Yeah.
But basically it looks like about every 3 or 4 years, a new Pokemon game comes out. Of course, they start on the Game Boys, and they have kind of kept up with the system when you were talking, like Scarlet. What were the two? I have one of the most recent. I can't remember the name. Going to be extra geeky, Jeff. I got it just because one of their mean synergistic things that Nintendo does is Pokemon Go can connect to Pokemon the game. So if you want exclusive Pokemon in Pokemon Go,
of course,
you need connection to the Switch to get it. and you have to play the game so far. So I played like Scarlet long enough to be able to send postcards. And I'm like, yeah, I don't need to beat I've beaten this game before. I don't need to beat it again.
Yeah.
But I do have it for that. But yeah, basically games come out of about every 3 to 4 years, you get some set of new ones. And it sounds like what the card game does is they do a long. Well, it's every 3 to 4 years for two games. Because don't forget, every game,
and they do drop two.
They're amazing. They drop two versus the game. Mm-hmm. So you either have to trade with games or get both. And then it sounds like what you're saying is per every game set they drop, because, you know, we like, I remember working at Target when they dropped, I think, like Gold and Silver.
Oh, yeah. I do remember that. I worked at Toys R Us. I worked in the R zone at Toys R Us. So I worked in the video game section at Toys R Us as like just a side gig when I was teaching, just because I was like, I'm going to work at a toy store. That sounds fun. And it was Emerald, Ruby, and Sapphire. Those were like the three that were out there. I think it was like Sapphire and Ruby were like twins, and then Emerald had come out. What was interesting to me, and this just shows you where my mind was, is I was very interested in Emerald because the Pokemon on the cover was Rayquaza. And Rayquaza is the Pokemon version of a Quetzalcoatl, which is, I believe, an Aztec deity. So it's like so they made a Pokemon of an Aztec god, which is one of the things I taught. That was a great way for me to incorporate modern pop culture into a lesson where I was like, look, these things they're not dead. These aren't like ancient things that people have forgotten about. Pokemon still emulates these things. There's also, there's Pokemon is also surrounded by a bunch of, interesting lawsuits. Primarily the main one that we want to think of is, Wizards of the Coast suing Nintendo or Pokemon Inc. or whatever, or Pokemon USA for basically poaching its employees and for those employees for violating non-disclosure agreements. Because when Nintendo left Wizards of the Coast, they took the majority of their like programming and gaming directors. And it was an issue. But the one that I find actually the most interesting and something that really wasn't resolved until during the pandemic was a famously disgraced magician named Yuri Geller.
Oh,
disgraced.
Whoa.
Yes. Are you familiar with him?
No.
So he was one of those spoon bending mentalist guys. And he basically got. Johnny Carson was really big on he's a big magician fan. He's like a big magic fan. So he was really big on actually debunking frauds. And Yuri Geller was essentially pushing himself as a mentalist when he was really just kind of a fraud and got called out.
Aren't all magicians frauds then? It's not real magic.
Yeah, but when you're claiming that you're a mentalist and you're saying, oh, I like. There's a difference between like being some dude at the magic castle being like, I could do some cool tricks, and somebody being like, I have telekinesis. It becomes a different thing. So
you got to sell it. You got to sell the magic, man. He's played a character.
That's yes. Kayfabe, Jeff. You got to keep kayfabe in the magic world.
So basically, there has been sort of an injunction to prevent Kadabra, the magic Pokemon, from being involved in that series. And it's been like there was a 20 year ago basically lawsuit, and on Twitter in 2020 he basically apologized, and this is a tweet on him, and that said,
because he's got the bent spoons.
Yeah, here, I am truly sorry for what I did 20 years ago. Kids and grown-ups, I am releasing the ban. Now it's all up to hashtag Nintendo to bring my hashtag Kadabra hashtag Pokemon card back. It will probably be one of the rarest cards now. Much energy and love to all. I never realized how powerful and important it was for me to lift the ban on Yungler / Kadabra, especially for all the kids around the world. He sued them in November of 2000. For basically making a mean-spirited Pokemon based on his existence. And I don't think he was ever going to like win, but he did stall this character. Like, you're not going to beat Nintendo in a lawsuit, but at the same time, you know, it was kind of a thing. Like, you know, he had this lawsuit being like, you're clearly making fun of me in your card.
I mean, what about the Pokemon Jinx?
Well, Jinx is...
We're going to talk about that one, or is that...
Yes. So, Jinx, the thing that's famously shocking about Jinx and a big problem in anime culture is the visualization of Black or Black-identifying characters, where they are giving them sort of minstrel-looking faces. And Jinx is she looks like an eggplant with wax lips on her face. And that is also a very, very, and I think they've gone through a bunch of, like, Nintendo has gone through and sort of justified what Jinx actually is and why, you know, it's not like that. Has Jinx been pulled?
No, well, what I heard is she, because I feel like I've seen it, but maybe it might be like the Mandela effect, where her skin used to be black and they changed it to purple.
I just pulled up the Bulbapedia entry, and the first image, Jinx used to be black. You're not wrong. That's no Mandela effect. That's, ouch. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's not uncommon in anime. The Japanese animators and designers have not always been cruel to, have not always been cruel to black identifying characters. Famously, Dragon Ball Z has a
character. Oh my gosh.
Mr. Popo.
Yeah. Yes. But regardless of all these things, Pokemon has become the dominant force in gaming. Since its inception, Magic the Gathering has always been really strong, and it continues to go. But even if you're Hasbro, you are not going to, because, you know, Wizards of the Coast is now owned by Hasbro. You're not going to compete with what Nintendo is pulling off. You're just not going to. Like, Nintendo has so much momentum behind it that they go through there. So, Elise, you started playing, you said, in elementary school. Was that like early 2000s?
Yeah.
Okay. And so, when did you stop? I'm not going to try to age you on the podcast.
When did I stop?
Yeah. Like, how long did you play?
Honestly, probably around middle school.
Okay. So you had a few years in there.
Yeah. And most of the playing I did was on the Game Boy game because, again, it was hard to find people that actually wanted to sit down and play a card game with me.
Yeah.
I remember trying to teach my mom how to do it, and she's like, I don't get this. This looks like witchcraft. I was like, no.
Was your mom like, she's like, this looks like witchcraft, I don't feel comfortable with it, or was she just making fun of it?
I think she was just making fun of it because my brother played Magic. So I think that's why, I think that's why I got familiar with it, because I would play with his Magic cards because they had like really pretty pictures on it and stuff.
Yeah, and to the point where they had a lot of really great artists, and they actually, Wizards of the Coast, famously or infamously, threw some of their artists to redesign some of the cards. So you're like, there's a Mewtwo card that was done by like this phenomenal artist, and people are like, it looks weird, but also it's really cool, which has been really interesting. Yeah. So you stuck around for a couple of years.
Mm-hmm. And I remember, like, I would always go to the Pokemon movies because they'd give you a free card.
Yeah.
Too, and that was really cool.
That was the only way to get Mew was the movie in the beginning. Like, that was the only way to get that character, was to go see the movie, which is phenomenally brilliant and evil as hell.
And honestly, I played some rounds with Mew and Mewtwo in my deck, and they're not that great of characters. Like, they're not good fighters.
No, you would have to. I mean, so what I saw with Mewtwo is that he basically just eliminates other characters' abilities to do anything. And Mew eliminates that. So they're essentially counter spells against other Pokemon, really.
Yeah, well, like Mewtwo, I mean, maybe it's there's different versions, because I know they have different versions.
There sure
the
are.
Same. Yeah. The ones that I played with, like Mew just had a de-evolution attack, where if you evolved your Pokemon, you could regress it, but then they could just put the card back on it the next turn. And so that's why, I guess the only way I could see that is, well, no. Because it's like there's no point of it, because I thought maybe if you wanted to send it back down like a stage so it has less hit points, but then that would be your attack, so your turn's over. And then their next turn, they could just evolve the Pokemon again.
Yeah.
So I even remember playing, I'm like, why am I doing this? This is pointless.
Well, I think a lot of it is like, a lot of it was because there are ways to like draw out the game. That like a lot of people that if they play a blitz game, like if you're playing like with a Rattata or something like that, that is designed to be really fast, that if you can find ways to draw that out. And I believe in the original run, you would have Abra. I think it's Abra who like would, he sends damage to other Pokemon.
Oh, that's Alakazam.
Alakazam.
Yeah,
so
Slowbro does that too.
Yeah. You'd have Alakazam. And then there was this other card that had 120 hit points. So you would basically put four copies of that on your bench,
mm-hmm.
and you would just keep sending damage to your tanks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then healing them. And then
yeah,
going
like
through
the Chansey and Snorlax cards.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, yeah, exactly. Like there are these really well-known cards and pieces and pieces of the game that you kind of have that through. Now, looking through all of this stuff and looking at the prices of what these are, like there are some very valuable cards. Famously, you know, when you look at you know, I think that what's the rarest one is like the Shadowless Holofoil Charizard from the base set,
mm-hmm.
which is worth $500,000 if it's perfect.
$500,000
if it's graded at a 10. Or something.
So Jeff, I got to ask this question because we've said this anecdote on the show before. You were on a failed pilot of some sort where yeah. someone brought some old Pokemon cards by and you had to be the expert, you know, on the Pawn Stars or
yeah.
or comic book men that came in that had to give some backstory and say, sorry, we can't buy them.
During the dip,
Jeff,
yeah.
If you, Jeff, just personally, do you think there would have been any shot for you to tell that person, hey, I'll give you a couple hundred just for my personal collection? And if you had done that, what would those be worth now? And if you want to recap which cards and stuff.
So there was what they called, like, I guess the Power Three, if we want to use Wizards of the Coast, phrasing, but it's Venusaur, Blastoise, and Charizard. Those are your, even though they're not the most powerful characters in the game, they're the most popular of the big three. And obviously we talked more about that boxer Pokemon. He's a better card to have in your deck than a Charizard. But so those three, and he brought those three in, and at the time we were in a dip. They were raw, ungraded. And I was like, look, dude, like I know these were worth something, and I'm not saying they're not going to be worth something in the future, but right now there's this sort of dip in the collectibles market. This was back in like 2015 or 2016. If I had bought them now, they'd be worth, you know, raw condition, a couple hundred bucks a pop, you know, and if I had gotten them graded and they came back a high grade, which is probably not likely to get high grades, especially with card game cards. High grades are very rare because the cards are meant to be played with, especially when it's a group of children buying the cards, that, you know, it is what it is. So one thing I do want to show you that I have in my own personal collection, even though I do not play this game, is I have a sealed Pokemon Thunderstorm gift box. This is copyright 1999-2000 Nintendo of America. And within here, you get a pre-constructed Thunderstorm theme deck, which contains cards from Base 2, Jungle Fossil, Rocket, and Gym Heroes expansions. and a holographic card. 3 11 card booster packs from their most recent expansions. So it would have been one of those or whatever. A CD-ROM, a playmat, a coin featuring Pikachu, a card bag, a list, a rule book, damage counters, and a tip sheet. These right now go on eBay for about $1,000.
Wow. Open it.
No, talk about it. I got to be honest. So here's the thing. I might.
Don't you dare, Jeff. I've been having fights with Jeff about, like, Jeff's gotten so into pack breaking. He's just like, oh, it's so fun. I got to do it. And I'm like, you can save the expensive stuff.
But it would be funny to do that, especially some dipshit like me that won't even know what the rare card is when I open it.
Oh, so Jeff, do you want some trivia that makes this game awesome? And I've got way more quests for you, Elise, about everything for this.
Yeah, of course.
One of the cool things about the Pokemon set is every card tells you the rarity.
I know,
with
the star, the
which
circle,
is awesome.
Diamond,
so, you don't need to know. It's actually built for kids, which is really cool. On the same note from collecting, I got to know, did you keep any of your old, you played and you even went to the movies. Do you have any of those back at home still? Did you top load any of them when you were a kid, nerdy elementary middle schooler?
Yeah, I had a whole binder with little card, things. And I texted my parents about it and they still have them. I put them in this old Star Wars binder that has the zipper cover around it. And so I have it zipped up somewhere in my bedroom somewhere.
That,
well, now
I mean,
it's a storage closet.
Those might be in good condition and worth something. That's where, because I mean,
I hope
Jeff asked
are.
The same as me. I had some, but I didn't. They weren't bindered originally. They were just kind of out, and some
mine in little binders, and I remember all my friends did. That was a big because we liked collecting them and showing. I remember one of my friends. this is so bad. We had a fight, and so I took one of her cards and I bent it.
Oh, you're like, and that was a shadowless holographic Charizard.
I know, I would never do it. We all knew about the Charizard, not about the shadow, but we knew Charizard was a huge find if you got that. But no, I feel like I just did it to a regular one. Probably
but
a
you
diamond
play for,
one.
You play for keeps and fight Jeff, whatever's going on in the softball league.
I know, right? If I lose a battle, I just pick up their Charizard and rip it. Now we both lose, bitch.
it is very funny because I'm looking, because here's the thing. First off, eBay has really become a major sort of price guide for how much stuff is worth. Mm-hmm. So if you can, what I've done right now is I went on eBay and I looked up, what are some PSA 10s going for? So as of March 19th, I'll do this. So 1999 Pokemon First Edition Shadowless Blastoise Base 2, PSA 10, meaning graded gem mint perfect, sold, its asking price was about $40,000.
Wow.
So that's what the going rate was there. Suzuki-san M. Sachiko EX 290 out of XYP, PSA 10 graded, went for $45,100. This looks like it's two cards, I want to say. So maybe that's, or maybe that's both sides of it. I don't know. But needless to say that these cards, Japanese Lily, I don't know. There's so many little codes on here, but a 2014 Klefki third place competition PSA 10 Phantom Force Pokemon card, 1 of 1 rare, $26,000. So, these things are not just still doing well, because some of these cards that are selling for this much money are from 2017. Mm-hmm. It is wild to see, 2006 Pokemon Gold Star EX Dragon Frontiers Charizard Holo PSA 10, $17,000. These are not nothing.
Yeah.
A first edition holographic Mewtwo from the 1999 base set went for $16,000.
$16,000. I know for sure I have that card.
Well, if it's perfect.
I know for sure. Oh, my gosh. Perfect.
Same thing with the Gyarados. Went for around 16,000.
Gyarados. What a noob.
Yeah, I don't play this game. Yeah, so your fan, you know, your legendary collection box topper Charizard went for 15,300. A Korean first edition Charizard Holo, 15,000. So these things aren't nothing.
Yeah.
They've obviously rebounded in huge ways, and a lot of that came from the pandemic.
Oh, really?
The pandemic caused Pokemon and collectibles in general to explode. Trading cards were one of these things where, like, people weren't going out to eat anymore, so people were, say, you know, we laugh at that, but the amount of money that wasn't poured into restaurants got poured elsewhere.
Yeah, and a lot of I believe it. I started collecting vinyl in the pandemic.
Yeah, like, well, because we had so much time.
Mm-hmm.
We were miserable, so we were seeking, you know, we were looking for something to cover up, you know, we were looking for band-aids to deal with our stuff. We were, you know, some people obviously were losing money, but we were getting checks from the government, you know, these like kind of stimulus checks, and people were figuring out what to do with it. And so the collectibles market exploded.
Mm-hmm.
The company I worked for had their biggest year of all time, and they were a collectibles company. And that really was just because people had money, free time, and wanted to just chill out and enjoy the shit they grew up with. What I'm afraid that I've done now is re-sparked a sickness in you.
In me?
Which happens when, because, and we'll get to this later because there's going to be some bonus content that you want there, but I have here some packs of cards, and I dropped some off at your house earlier today.
Yes.
For you to open. And I got to tell you, from somebody who's been opening packs of cards on camera, and Dre, you know this too, because you've been doing the same thing. It gets addicting. Yeah, you've got your NBA hoops right there. Opening packs of cards is really addicting. It's gambling. Yeah.
It is like gambling for kids, because you don't know what's in it.
Yeah.
You want to know.
I have, if you look around my, like right above my head, I have just boxes of trading cards sealed that are waiting to be opened. And at my feet as well, here's some Fleer basketball for you, Dre.
Oh, what year? What year? Those can be
93, 94.
I was going to say, if you had any early 80s or mid 80s Fleer are, yeah,
there are
absurd.
No,
and it's actually Jeff's Fleer fault for this exact show, because, you know, we look up stuff for cards. eBay is usually the first hit. And so eBay is like, hey, by the way, a pack of 86 Fleer, or like a box, that's only 30 grand. And they're like, hey, the seller's dropped it to 25. They're like, just tell the seller what you want. And I'm like, I'm not dropping 20 grand on some cards. But to Jeff's point, he reignites this.
Yeah. So I am sorry that if you want a PSA 10 Gem Mint Blastoise that sold on April 3rd, you'd have to pay $10,000 for it. Or a first edition base set Venusaur Holo in Portuguese would also be about $10,000.
Wow.
I was going to say, I'm definitely curious, though, about like the very, very end. Was it just a natural phase out? Because it was very interesting. So Jeff's phase out of Star Wars CCG, ironically,
was
that Wizards of the Coast came in and destroyed it in front of his face, just grabbed it. And then maybe that's what convinced Nintendo to say, no, we're not going to let Wizards of the Coast hold our IP anymore. My friend Brian Fostery, like, won a big tournament and left. You said middle. I'm assuming nothing that major. Was it just, I mean, that seems like a good age to just get into other stuff regardless. But it does sound like you treated it, you know, you were using binders, treating it seriously, using it as revenge tactics. Do you remember leaving it, or did it just naturally phase out?
I think it naturally phased out because I kept getting bullied at school for liking anime. So,
oh, God.
And baby, look where you are now, huh?
I know, right? I got out of Florida. I'm not in jail like all the other assholes I went to school with.
Yeah, you were supposed to be into meth by then.
I know. See, I spent all my meth money on Pokemon cards.
You're like, Pokemon? Where's your stolen dirt bike? What part of
Yeah,
Florence
no, just
originally?
Kind of phased out. Also, it's not very, you know, I'm a girl, so it's not very, trading cards wasn't really seen as a girl thing to do.
Yeah.
So, like,
to which now, you know, I think it's very interesting to see that the, from what I understand, the play, it used to be obviously the play field was very different, but because of how Pokemon evolved, it's closer to 50-50 than any other game.
Oh, good.
any other card game, like Pokemon really is that, because we've seen, you know, it used to be like Magic the Gathering was the king, and Pokemon and Magic and Star Wars were one and two consistently. Pokemon comes in, really makes headway. And then we're going to get eventually where we are now with Yu-Gi-Oh! Where last night I was courted to a place called Frank and Sons, which is a very, very famous nerd kind of swap meet. It's sort of like if you were to go to a comic book convention, it would be like all the vendors at a comic book convention are there. It was dazzling. My very good friend, very cool friend, Eric Barnes, took me there and was like, let's go. He's like, he actually bought me some packs of cards to open because, you know, he was like, ah, you've done this favor. I'm gonna bring you here and do that. And we walked around, and I would say one out of every three booths was a Pokemon, Magic, and or Yu-Gi-Oh! Dealer. Mm-hmm. It is massive. Like, in a way where I went into the card shop in Burbank and asked some questions. And the guy was like, how much time do you have for this answer?
Wow.
And I was like, 8 minutes. He's like, all right, quick answer is you want to buy these. Long answer is you want to buy these, but not these, with these, when you want to push these, and these workmen can. And like, I was getting dizzy about this. So we're going to guess that you left probably middle school. I'm going to guess is probably mid 2000s for you.
Mm-hmm.
So sort of as it had shifted to Pokemon USA being its sort of own distributor, leaving Wizards of the Coast. Wizards did sue. And Dre, if you want to find out what happened in that lawsuit, if you want to see who won, because I didn't find that information, and you are better than me at researching.
I was actually like, I was getting super excited. You were like, if you want to find out, I'm like, I do, Jeff. Is that what's coming up next? And maybe I'll look it up in the background, and we'll see if it's BoneCon. But yeah,
some BoneCon in there. I don't know. Oh, cat's meowing. She's a big.
I do love for a fact that at the start of this podcast, Jeff was like, and here is like the most interesting lawsuit in this research. And I was yes.
I saw that hit. Well, that one and the I really think the Uri Geller one is actually way more interesting, because he wasn't wrong to feel like they absolutely were shitting on him for being a fraud. And like, I get that if you were called out as a fraud, you'd be like, you know, you'd be feeling a little disgraced. That doesn't mean that his lawsuit wasn't viable. But you know, in 20, I guess when we're all teetering on the edge of death, with catching a virus, it doesn't seem so bad. And so he just basically either dropped the lawsuit or they finally settled it, but it was 20 years of what is essentially a legally, I want to say legally binding, but like an injunction almost on this character, which I find very fascinating.
Do you want some irony in that? He is basically destroying the SEO for trying to find out the Wizards of the Coast lawsuit. Because even trying to look up Pokemon Go, the trading card, Nintendo, Wizards of the Coast lawsuit, all of the lawsuit ones want to be that weird magician one. And by the way, if no one out there, like we're super old, Jeff, because I know, I remember, I never didn't watch Johnny Carson, but of course was a big enough staple I remember. If you have not seen the Johnny Carson, Uri Geller clips, they're on YouTube. It is phenomenal. And also the gall of Uri Geller with how he looked. Like, there has never been a more 70s, 80s looking person. Doesn't he have like a weird mustache and haircut, if I recall? Like, he's something. Like, if you look up what Uri Geller was sporting as his stage persona, to be like, this card is making fun of me. Like, dude, I don't know what to tell you. Like, magicians from the past, of all the things that don't age well, like the looks of 1980s magicians do not age well at all.
I would say the look of any magician at any time is going to be like, you're gonna be like, this isn't going to last. Like, because like they have to be like, magicians have to engage in a form of pageantry that every other profession would find embarrassing. In for multiple reasons. You have to be distracting. You know, there's a mysticism to that. You're not gonna see comedians dressed like magicians. Like, that would be embarrassing.
There's that guy, Josh Adelman, is a magician, and he does comedy, though.
No, a comedy magician, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, aren't all magicians, though, they have one-liners that they tell?
Well, you have to, because if you're just doing, you're just doing tricks, people are like, oh, I don't know what that, I don't care. So it seems to me like the differences were resolved in December of 2003 before it went to court. So I don't know if they got like a huge kickback or whatever, but
before it went to court and after 9/11, seems suspicious.
It does. Yeah. Right.
Check that Kazam, the Alakazam card, and see if there's two towers in the background.
Yeah. He's holding a little detonator instead of a spoon.
How do we get this much 9/11 talk on? So if you haven't checked out the Magic the Gathering one,
really?
9/11 talk just shows up when Jeff and Collectible Card Games collide in a podcast. 9/11's not far behind.
Man, the Illuminati's real.
You're never prepared for the 9/11 talks. Yeah. So here's what we got here. And so just a basic idea of what's going on and like a very, very quick summary. So Wizards of the Coast actually got the patent on the games in 1997. On collectible card games. In January of 99, Wizards of the Coast began publishing Pokemon trading card game after they got the rights in August of 98. So it took about 4 months from getting the rights to pushing it out. This is actually very important to know, because they got this game out so quickly after interpreting and everything that the American version, the Japanese version, had about 4 or 5 errors in its first set. The American version was littered with errors, wording errors, things that actually broke the game, because in Japan, a lot of the cards would say, you know, whenever they would establish effect that would affect the card, it would say this card, right? So they would be like, oh, something, something, something. You know, remove all things off of this card. Magic the Gathering and Wizards of the Coast in general used to say the name of the card. Problem with that is when you have clone cards, what you're doing is you're cloning all of the text. So if you're stealing Charizard's text and Charizard's like, remove all fire emblems off of Charizard, if you're using that as your effect, you're also pulling the emblems off of Charizard, because that's what the cloned text is. And that actually broke the game. There are cards like Dark Persian never had heal points. There was just no HP on the first version of that. There's a great video on YouTube by @DeltaSeeker, DeltaSeeker, that really does sort of explain the breakdown between Wizards and Pokemon USA and Nintendo in general. Nintendo are fiercely protective of their IP, and they do not suffer poorly made versions of their things. And that did rub the people, both in America and Japan, the wrong way by putting out a product that had inferior quality control. Replacing this card from the Japanese to the actual name of the card actually did kind of break the system there. And it took them a year to fix it. We ended up, they end up going in and establishing that, even though sports cards, like some sports card companies actually had to be discontinued. So literally Pokemon was so popular that printers that were printing baseball cards, for example, were then switched to Pokemon. So it literally killed chunks of an industry.
Wow.
Like, think about that. Like, when you're like, oh, you know, sorry, you can't get your favorite version of, you know, basketball cards or soccer cards because more people want Pokemon cards. And it won the 1999 National Parenting Center's Seal of Approval. Now, this Seal of Approval is going to have a big asterisk on it, because Pokemon ends up becoming the most divisive thing in schools. Except for guns, I guess.
Yeah.
But there was, you know, they ended up being banned. There was trades. There were, you know, kids historically trading lunches. Who cares? Not a big deal. Kids trading expensive trading cards with each other, that becomes a problem. Lopsided.
Yeah, we would do that at lunch. We'd bring our cards and like either pay each other for them or trade them.
Yeah.
Yeah. How wild did it get? You were saying Florida. So did you get any like pushback? The schools have to come in and regulate, or is it all copacetic?
No, we did have a Pokemon ban, like no cards and stuff. It started off like as a distraction, kids would do it in class and then you'd bring it at lunch. And then finally they're like, no, none of that. I remember my dad, my friend and I, her nanny would take us to this like trading card shop where every Friday night, or I forgot when it was, some during the week, like at night, they would have like a Pokemon specific night. And we'd go there all the time and it was crazy. Like some kid would buy a booster pack and then everyone would gather around them in the store watching them open it. And if they were like, oh, look, I got a holographic card, the guy would like ring the bell and then everybody would just be like, I'll trade you this for it. It was like a stock market.
But it's exciting.
Yeah, I remember like my dad took us there once and like he couldn't believe it. Like there was like this kid going around being like, hey, I got energy here for like a quarter each and stuff.
It's like
that.
The floor of the New York Stock Exchange.
It was basically that, but with Pokemon cards. Yeah. I still remember the excitement of like everyone gathering around me when I opened the card and be like, oh, look, I found this. I'll be like, I'll give you this for it. I'll give you this for it. I'll get, you know.
I love that. And like, that's one of the reasons that I think people are really enjoying, plug here, shameless plug, I Must Break You, like the card breaking where I open the packs of trading cards. That idea of like unboxing a mystery that could be valuable.
Yeah.
People are obsessed with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so engaging with that, man, I don't even know if you realize this, Elise, but if you got into opening packs of trading cards and you started doing that, you'd do well.
Really?
yeah. Because most people that break packs look like me or Dre. Not
okay,
you.
Great.
You, I think you would do quite well. No offense to you, Dre, or myself, but
I was gonna say, Jeff, if we've kind of established you in the trading card game as like the Billy Bean general manager. So I mean, I'll give the advice that if you're trying to get at least to like join I Must Break You and do Pokemon cards on your network, if there's any shot of that. Don't, first off, at least don't take it, the offer's too low. But if that's, but Jeff, I'm doing both sides. I'm like, Jeff, if you can get that trade, do it. And then on the flip side, I'm like, no. If I was your agent, I would say, don't you dare.
Elise, you should do this on your own. Like, yeah. You 100% should do this. I'm not even kidding. Like,
okay. I loved doing it when I was little. It was exciting. So, and I'm really excited about opening these. Not going to lie. When you told me that you were going to give me cards to open, I was like, what if I finally open it and there's a Charizard in there? Like, what if it took like 20 years to get a Charizard?
I don't even know if that set has Charizard in it.
No, it doesn't. Now that I look at it, I'm like, yeah, this is bullshit. But what?
Oh, thanks. Cool. Cool. I paid money for that. So that's cool.
No, I'm excited to open it.
Yeah. So basically by 2000, Wizards had sold millions and millions of copies of the game. They released a set that included like an instructional CD-ROM. It's a very 1999 sentence to have. Wizards published to 2003. The Pokemon Company then produced a new edition for the game one day after the sort of agreements had ended. So the agreements expired September 30th. On October 1st, the Pokemon Company released their first set, and Wizards filed suit against Nintendo on October 1st, accusing them of, quote, abandoning a contract with Wizards, the longtime producer and distributor of Pokemon trading card games, and using Wizards' patented methods and technology to manufacture the games itself. And that is according to Wikipedia. The two companies resolved their differences in December of 2003. So over 2 months, it got resolved.
Is that real or did you write that on the Wikipedia page?
I don't have Wikipedia edit abilities. I really find that to be very interesting, though, that the idea that they got through this within 2 months. So I'm guessing there had to be some kind of a kickback to Wizards of the Coast for that, because and the big, I think, point is using their methods and technology to manufacture the games. That's really where they're going to get you. That's like getting Al Capone on tax evasion. They could probably you know, violating the contract when it's a certain agreement, it's a lot easier to navigate, but using proprietary technology or skills, that's a totally different thing.
So Jeff, this is the one off road for this. And I want to hear the both cast, both of your votes on this. I'm really curious. So on the Star Wars CCG episode, Jeff came out with a hot take, said dice have no place in card games. Those that don't know, the Star Wars CCG game, what they do is they have a little number on the top of every card that essentially acts as like a faux dice, or like if you consider war, kind of that dynamic where you're going to draw a card, number on the top, that's what you decide. I think the reason the reason Jeff likes this as a dynamic of the card game is part of the gameplay mechanic is manipulation of the deck. And the same is true in Pokemon, the card game.
Playing cards.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So we're getting there, Jeff, because I was going to say, like, in Pokemon, the card game, there are things like you shuffle, and tell me if I step on myself on any of this. I'm just going cursorily off the rule book that I read right before today. But, you know, you shuffle, you draw cards. There are cards that let you reshuffle. Of course, there are like discards, right? Certain cards, as you were saying, hit energy off, et cetera. You were saying like the Mew and Mewtwo do stuff. But, and here's my like main contention with the Pokemon card game as to why I wasn't interested. It does an amazing job replicating the actual game, which is why the Pokemon trading card game video game is bizarre, because it's a video game based on a card game based on a video game.
Yeah.
You remixed a remix and it's the same thing. Mitch Hedberg joke for those that don't know. But all I was going to say is one thing that the Pokemon game and card game has is randomness. And Jeff, the way this is handled,
I know.
Pokemon card game, as well as apparently you were saying, Elise, the start of the game, there's a coin.
Yeah.
Coin is official. Coin is part the Pokemon card game. So I'm really curious what both of you think about the dynamic of using coin as part of the gameplay of the Pokemon card game.
I liked it. I like it. Like with different attacks. You would, like a Ninetales has an attack where you flip a coin 8 times. And every time you get heads, you get 10 points, 10 hit points of damage you do. And then, like, if your Pokemon's paralyzed, you flip a coin at the start to see if it's still paralyzed or not. And then certain times, Eevee had one, I forgot what it's called, like Tail Dance or Tail Wag, where if you flip a coin in its heads, that means they can't attack you. Or if they're like confused, they have to flip a coin to see if they can attack you or not.
Yeah, so
I loved it. Liked it.
So. It's a 50. So it's you're playing odds now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't respect
there's more
it.
Of a chance to get heads, right? Isn't that the thing?
but that being said, here's the thing. Of all of the companies to do that, it makes sense that Nintendo would be the company to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily because Nintendo is very big on taking something that exists and incorporating new things. That's why the Wii ended up being a new type of game. They ended up doing that cardboard thing, right? Nintendo had that, like, you could build stuff out of cardboard and play with it.
Yeah,
like,
and then, like, still, it would be like a piano or something.
You know, they circumvented the video game phrasing by basically selling you an entertainment system with a robot. That was how they ended up getting in toy stores, because video games collapsed because of Atari. So Nintendo is going to be the ones that are going to add something weird or do something different to a card game.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that. I guess if it's just a coin, it is what it is, but if you have to bring that as part of your thing, but like if you start being like, take one of your 9 coins and doing that, then it no longer becomes a card game, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, you just have one coin, but it's not for everything. Sometimes you have to, I mean, you use it anyway at the start of the battle to see who gets to go first.
Yeah, no, I get it. I get it. Like, the thing was, is like when there was like rolling dice involved in card games, I'm like, no, because now it's a dice and card game. But I guess if you have no other way to find the randomness of it,
mm-hmm.
You could use a random number generator on Google if you wanted, I guess. It would be the same thing.
That we all had Google in 1999.
No, yeah, that's why I'm exactly. saying now, then it's all good. But yeah, so So we got that going for us. So as I had said before, because we kind of wanted to go through there and talk about, like, you know, we can't really talk about all the sets. There's like, what, 111 or something like that?
Yeah. Like,
that's a lot. The next one that's going to be coming out from recording will be on June 9th of 2023. It's going to be called Scarlet and Violet Paldea Evolved. I think from there, Dre, have we covered? I mean, we obviously aren't going to be able to cover everything. There's famously the Logan Paul Pokemon.
Oh, the fake card.
The bootleg card that he wore around his neck. He bought a sealed box, opened them, and actually did a thing with PSA, where PSA labeled those cards as from the Logan Paul break, which I think is really interesting. So he got his own label through the company PSA. And for those of you that don't know, PSA is the sort of the Coca-Cola of card grading companies. There are different companies, CSG and BSG and all that, that do all these different ones. But PSA tends to be the main one that they literally partnered with Logan Paul to add that sort of legacy onto those cards.
What a legacy. It's like they're giving him Pokemon label, right? His own.
Yeah. Well, it's so like the label on the thing, it has like the grading and everything like that. And then there's a little note on it that says from the Logan Paul.
Yeah. That's like the guy that made the I know him because he made that distasteful video going to Japan and being like an absolute idiot. Yeah. But that, and then going to this forest and filming that.
Yeah.
So here you go.
Yeah, he's just really ruining Japan. On January 13th, the New York Post, on January 13th, the New York Post went out and published this thing that says Logan Paul lost $3.5 million on fake Pokemon cards. They opened up, the outside of the boxes had Pokemon branding. The inside was, and this is very funny to me, packs of G.I. Joe trading cards. I have countless packs of those cards. They are worthless.
Mm-hmm.
And that is so funny to me that he bought those cards and that they ended up being worthless. And yeah, he paid $3.5 million on that. And he posted a YouTube video about it. That happened on the previous Thursday. So they all got duped.
Good karma.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I don't know. Like, I don't really know enough about him to either hate or like him. You know, like, I'm not going to say someone sucks because they made a lot of money doing something I'm not good at.
But
he does kind of seem like a tool. You can go. If you go to Logan Paul's, his YouTube, he goes, I lost $3,500,000 on fake Pokemon cards. To which one of the inspectors actually said, this is the biggest fraud in the entire history of Pokemon.
Can I ask an interesting question that you might know, since you mentioned you have worked in comic book shops and stuff, Jeff, but like for that, was there nothing, shouldn't he have done some due diligence? Like I actually out here, the two-parter that got me back into trading cards was you and Scooter G's in Appleton, Wisconsin. Shout out. They are going out of business. So if either of you visit Appleton, Wisconsin, hit up Scooter G's because they're closing in June. So limited amount of time to get out here. But I was talking to him and he had some like rare cards stolen. And I was talking to him and he said, like, you know, card shops, they actually very pawn shop will like have rules. Like if someone comes in with one of those $40,000 Pokemon cards and sells it, by due diligence, they're supposed to like hold it for a bit just in case and wait. So if Logan Paul drops $3.5 million, there's no, I'm just like baffled that there was no escrow or anything. Cause like, did he just hand the money over and they left with it? There was no, like, that just seems baffling to me.
So, his friend, Balilo Lajansan is the one that like sold them to him or something. And so we say right here, TMZ reported that Belilo Lajansan said, quote, "I have reimbursed Logan his 3.5. However, we will see how quickly I am made whole from the sellers who brought it to me already authenticated in the coming days, or if it turns into a drawn out scenario." So
this is much like he clearly went clickbaity there, because that's much more boring, right? It's like Logan Paul's friend had to give him back money that he gave him. And that person says it's authenticated, so that's probably going to go in something. Like, it's a much more boring story to say, like, Logan Paul seeking refund on purchase, as opposed to I lost $3.5 million. So, all right.
Either way, like, you know, to talk about how much Pokemon has permeated through like the bloodline of American society and global society in general is like, if you yell, "Gotta catch them all," at somebody, they know what you're talking about. Which, by the way, perfect tagline if you're making collectibles, by the way. That is the heroine of eight-year-olds saying, "Gotta catch them all." And they're like, "Yes, I do. And I need to buy the cards to prove it."
Yeah.
One guy tried offering to sell me a $350 pack of cards to open on this. I politely declined.
Well, if they want to give it to you, that'd be cool. Like, if anybody ever wants to pay either of you to break an expensive pack of cards, that seems reasonable. But
I'll add that the guy at San Diego Comic-Con that also has a trading card, he's a trading card guy. He sells just packs and packs of trading cards. He like doubled his price of all of his stuff. And I got to tell you, I was really annoyed when I went there, but that's neither here nor there. So Pokemon's such a big deal. Obviously, the games are still coming out. Starting out, by the way, graduating from being a Game Boy game to being this other larger thing is also insane, because I think maybe Kirby is the only other thing that started as a handheld and then became wider in the lexicon, and Kirby ain't coming close to what Pokemon has done.
Mm-hmm.
You look confused to me, Dre. When I brought up.
No, I'm trying to think. I'm agreeing. Yeah. I mean, maybe kind of Tetris, but yeah, not even.
Well, but Tetris started on computers for one, but.
Haven't seen the movie. Spoilers, Jeff.
So with Pokemon, what came, the card game came first? And then
I believe the.
It was the Game Boy game. Yeah.
It was the Game Boy game, and then they made a TV show from the Game Boy game?
Or it was all like this kind of. See, the thing that I found very interesting is the fact that this is a that it's run by three different companies own that trademark or whatever you want to call it. I don't know, the Nintendo, Game Freak, and Creatures Inc. So like they're all working together. And I think Creatures Inc. were the ones that sort of like designed and created them. And Nintendo was the one that sort of commissioned it. So it's like a whole thing. But yeah, it's been going strong for what? 25 years, 26 years now. That ain't nothing. Like, that is a hell of a thing. I remember, geez, when my brother had a car he was driving around in like 1999 that had he put a Pikachu sticker on it. Like, this stuff is everywhere. Like, Pokemon is an obsession. I'll put it this way. Just by knowing Veronica Taylor, I have a ton of Pokemon fans that will like talk to me and message me on social media. They have no reason to do that. It's just that this is such a vehement and ingrained fandom that it's just so cool. Like it's a phenomenon. Pikachu is pretty cool.
So I am very curious on your thoughts, Jeff, on the button of the pack break, because I'm definitely excited about that, but I don't know the full. So Jeff obviously has this full logistics. And what did he give you? So at least for the audio listeners.
Well, yeah.
For Bone Cut. So at least you want to say what he gave you. It doesn't have Charizard, but what has he got, and what could it be?
Okay. So I got an Elite Trainer box.
Pokemon Go.
Yeah, Pokemon Go.
This is a card game that also, I guess, can work in conjunction with Pokemon Go itself. So it's synergistic.
Really? So I could play, okay, even though they look different, it can still play with the...
Well, if you open it, I think there's a whole booklet that'll explain everything.
There's a player's guide.
So if you're just listening to the audio, there's like a player's guide. The box, this is like the Mewtwo themed box. And I bought this one because it was $5 more. And I asked the dude why. And he goes, Mewtwo, baby. which, by the way, I will be giving that Mewtwo away. I have it. I don't know how I'm going to do it, but it did come with a special foil Mewtwo that you could only get in that thing. And I'm going to figure out how to give it away, but I might put it randomly in a rookie card. Like I'll just blindly put it in one of the envelopes and just drop it in.
Okay.
For those that don't know, let's give a shout out to that. So at patreon.com/JeffMay, there are two tiers. You get the X rookie card tier, as well as, I forget what you call the other tier, Jeff, but the one
that's Two-Face.
The Two-Face tier.
Yeah. Two-Face
Harvey,
to be a producer, and you get to be a...
You know what? Two-Face does, in fact, play the Pokemon card game. You know, I know, Jeff. I know.
Go ahead.
He's got the coin.
Because he flips a coin.
Yeah?
Yeah. Thought coming, and I still let you hit me with it.
You know what it was, Jeff? I just threw you a softball.
No.
Hey.
You have been sitting on those for so long.
The softball one... is not new. The Harvey one, that's just beauty there.
All right, so
what else we got?
I'm surprised you didn't make an unboxing joke about me and Elise at this point.
I think you did that like really, really early on. That's like your joke. I don't want
to. Yeah. We got to catch them all, but Jeff can't catch a softball.
So what do we got? Okay. We've been letting you unbox for...
Yeah, sorry. So there's this like nice little just opened up.
Now, keep in mind, I also did repack that box because I actually took some of the packs that were in there and switched them out with other packs.
Okay. Oh, now this has dice.
Boo!
Yeah,
so
I've never
seen. We've got this on camera. Jeff gifted a card game with dice. Jeff did that. And you just confessed to opening the box. So you knew it was in there, Jeff, and you still... gave the dice.
I'm not going to destroy the integrity of the game just because I don't believe in dice with card games.
Jeez. Oh. That's weird. All right.
What's weird?
Oh, this little...
Did you find the big old turd that I put in there?
That's disgusting. No.
Yeah.
Yes. There's a photo of you in here, Jeff?
Yeah. Look at me in a little Pikachu costume.
Ew, gross. All right.
I like that. I got the... Okay, so there's all sorts of crap in there. We have, there's like, I don't know what those are. Those are what, special Mew something or others.
They're Mewtwo, like dividers. They look like little.
Oh, yeah, they must be dividers for your cards, yeah.
Okay.
Because I guess you can just put your cards in that box if you wanted to collect them. And there should be a little sealed pack of energy cards, I believe.
Yes, here it is.
So that'll have all the different energies on them.
I've got the fighting one for you. Oops. Butterfingers.
There it is. Good. Yeah. Drop all the packs and refill all the cards.
There's this thing too. What's this?
Those are sleeves. So what you do is when you open your cards, if you want to play with them, you put them in those sleeves so they don't damage the cards, so you can protect them.
Okay.
And is there, I'm imagining, we kind of talk this magic, but apparently some of the different sets might have tells, like if the printing was a little different, or maybe Wizards of the Coast versus Nintendo USA. So none of the sleeves on the back prevent people from being able to like card count.
Yeah, that is also a thing. Like people used to, sometimes they would mark their cards. You know, they would find like a little, like put a little black highlighter or a little black Sharpie mark on a black part of a card. So only you would see the shine of the Sharpie.
Oh, wow.
Like people would do that. Yeah. So like that kind of prevents the marking.
Okay.
In that regard. But more than anything. Yeah. And especially like that was really big when Overpower did Marvel and DC in order to play the cards together. You would have to have these like hardback cards. And sometimes you can steal people's cards. Like in Star Wars, you used to be able to steal cards and play with them. So you'd need to have them protected so you knew, you didn't know that it was somebody else's card coming.
Okay.
Because you have light side, dark side. That makes sense.
Yeah. But so there was that. And then there was packs, right? There was.
Yes, there's five booster packs.
So there should be what, like three
Pokemon Go and then two Scarlet and Violet.
And two can you hold? Yeah, hold up. So can you hold up both and talk, and then we'll use that as like a maybe a photo or something at some point, or we can give it. Oh, sorry. Yeah, we.
So it doesn't look weird. Please.
So and then so I have the three Pokemon Go's, and then I have Scarlet and Violet and Brilliant Stars. But I also I saved four. I have four packs of Pokemon Go too that I don't know what I want to do with yet, as well as a pack of Brilliant Stars and Silver Tempest.
Ooh, sorry Silver to start Tempest. Talking too much business on the show, Jeff, but I mean, at some point you've got enough packs where, especially for your pack breaking, I don't know how this works with like YouTube or Twitch. I mean, you can certainly get to a place where you're like, hey, if enough people, I don't know, like, do either of you understand Twitch? Like, you know, like likes, subscribes, or
I think
you know,
Elise,
subs, or
at least you know Twitch, right?
No, I want to, though. I do streams on TikTok and everyone wants me to get a Twitch. And I don't know how to do all that.
I don't either. I'm such a Luddite.
But all I was going to say is, like, at some point, if you get good enough packs, you can be like, hey, if I get 20 pieces of Flare or whatever in the Twitch stream, I'll open a Pokemon Go pack or whatever.
Oh,
but I don't know.
I sent
send it to a or I'll open it and pick a random person and send it. So that being said, so we each have five packs. I figured that would be that. And I think we're going to do this, Dre, as Bone Con, right?
Yeah, I think so. So I was going to say, I don't necessarily know. We kind of hit the history. You definitely hit all the points. I definitely wanted to get the dice in. So do we want to say, like, at least you can get the last point on the main show, then we'll tease the Bone Con. And then that one, Jeff, I'm okay having, like, in the YouTube direct, but maybe we can do something like unlisted for a week, like copy the small beans route where just like you're
and then also I believe when we're doing it here it has to be Cubone Con, because that's the Pokemon with the dead parents that wears its mother's skull on its head.
That was a really good pun that rather than let breathe, you took it down a notch. So
well, that's okay, I like the darkness of that character, and also Mr. Mime, who's like the stepdad Pokemon, right?
What?
You know, like dating Ash's mom?
Oh. No, wait, he's just a help. No, he's a helper.
Yeah,
he's just a helper.
Bet he is.
Don't you dare.
I don't
ruin the purity of Pokemon.
That is one question I want to ask. You said you watched, like, what was like the last? I saw the first one in theaters, but what was like the last Pokemon movie you saw in theaters?
The last Pokemon one. Oh boy. I think it was the one where they're on like an island and there's a storm coming and there's this girl who plays like a legendary flute and Misty's like jealous of her. But I don't know. I don't remember. Was that wasn't the first Pokemon movie. No, the first Pokemon movie was the one with Mew and Mewtwo.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this had to have been the second one.
The lore
is this Poke shipping Pokemon 2000. Enjoy this. It says Pokemon 2000. It says her being jealous. I'm gonna have to watch this later.
Pokemon 2000 sounds about right.
Yeah, probably.
I always found that interesting. Yeah, because hers was a Togepi. That was her. She would carry it around with her. Now, one of the things, and I forgot to mention this, which is almost silly of me, but it would be weird not to bring up the fact that very recently Ash just became the grand champion of Pokemon, right?
Really?
That was like in the news that Ash finally was like the official grand champion.
Good.
Like, the story is like wrapped after 25 years.
That's good. Yeah, I remember watching it when he battled the Elite Four and lost. And I was just like, what the fuck?
What was the
whole point of watching this then?
You got to keep it moving, you know? You can't have Rocky win every fight because it gives you no reason to keep going.
Tell that to a fifth grader who invested so much time into this.
I don't think fifth graders have enough time to invest in something.
I like that better as a story of getting out of the Pokemon card game. It's just like Ash doesn't beat the Elite Four and you're like, no.
Right.
Like, I'm ripping up my cards.
It's like Game of Thrones. It just ruined it for everybody. It's like, what's the fucking point? Yeah,
Game of Cards.
Yeah.
But yeah, Elise, thank you. Honestly, like, it was really nice and refreshing to have somebody that really did have experience with the card game and to explain, like, you were like the perfect person for this. You were the right age for it when it hit. Dre and I just ask our knees. We were just a little too old for it to really hit at that time. I apologize if I have sparked a harmful addiction in you with these cards. Who knows? Maybe I'll just have a pack of cards, and every time you show up to softball, I'll just give you a new pack of cards.
That'd be awesome.
That's not going to happen.
Oh, okay. But
wouldn't that be nice?
It would be.
Elise, aside from the fact that you edit all these wonderful things, where else can people find you? What should people do if they want to follow, like, find you on TikTok, Instagram, Twitter? What do you want?
Yeah, you can find me on TikTok at Eliski, and then I'm on Twitter and Instagram at The Big Golgowski.
These are very easy names. I'm guessing Eliski is E-L-I-S-E-S-K-I.
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. And then The Big Golgowski, G-O-L-G-O-W-S-K-I.
Yes.
Elise, super, super funny comedian. If you are ever in the area and she is performing, go see her. She's great.
Mm-hmm.
And follow her on all the socials. She's great. And she might start doing pack breaks. Who knows?
Yeah.
Yeah, Jeff. I mean, I've kind of joked in the chat leading up to this that Jeff's turning into kind of like a mythic figure that sends cards to his listeners, that gives packs of cards to all of his friends. You have sparked multiple channels of just your fans on the Jeff Has Cool Friends fans for patreon.com/JeffMay. Multiple of us have just started recording because it's like, for me, I do pack break these, and it's like to keep myself in check. I'm like, if I'm going to break open the NBA pack, camera's got to be rolling and I get two a day. So it's like, yeah. I've got to put, because if I don't do that, then it's just like a cake in the break room and I'll eat the whole thing.
Yeah. One of the funny things is because I also do You Don't Even Like Sports Cards with Adam Todd Brown, and I only open sports cards on that show. And I only do non-sports on I Must Break You. But I have a glut of sports cards. So sometimes if I'm just like bored or like sad, I'll be like, maybe I'll open a pack of 92 Upper Deck hockey cards just to have some, just to open something, just to feel something. And I open it and I'm always just like, that was nice.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll do it in secret. Masturbating of card breaks. I keep it a shameful secret. But yeah, if speaking of which, Dre, because you did mention that, but I do pack breaking videos called I Must Break You. And that is my YouTube, which is at Hey There Jeffro, which hopefully you might be watching this on there. If not, head on over to there. I upload audio of my podcasts as well, as we do lots of great stuff. I have an amazing curator for my YouTube. He is the most talented, generous, and kind man that I know. So you can check that out. You can also find me at Hey There Jeffro on both Instagram and Twitter and all that. That's called synchronicity. Dre, you want to say something?
All right. Well, you missed a couple, right? So you're also on the Unpopular Opinion Network.
I was getting there.
Okay, let's hear it. Yeah, I want
to
make sure. Sure.
I fly on autopilot when it comes to plugs, baby. But I was just trying to use this to go in. Check out copies of episodes of I Must Break You. I'm having a lot of fun doing them. I was saying I was only going to do a month, one a month, and I'm probably going to do more. I'm probably going to do more than once a month.
Can your YouTube curator throw something to you?
Yeah, go for it.
If you keep those about 30 minutes and keep the level of energy you already have, which I know is legitimate, that makes for beautiful, beautiful excerpt content. So I speak as an amateur editor. I'm wicked impressed by the way, with anybody who does it professionally, because I know how good you are to be able to do it professionally. But there are two clips that I've pulled from your first two I Must Break Yous. There's the hologram hat trick, which went out on Wednesday. And there is the Leah Brahms haunting Jeff May.
Oh,
and
the Star Trek card kept coming in every goddamn pack.
Yeah, it's great. And you got some love on both of those really quick. So what I'll say is, if you do I Must Break You 30 minutes twice a month and keep it at the speed you've been keeping it, that makes for some easy extra content for the YouTube channel. I'll just throw that out there. If you wanted an excuse.
The only hard part is keeping it at 30 minutes because breaking a box of something takes anywhere from 45 minutes.
Yeah, I think, sorry to get too much in the weeds, and this will probably get cut to future editor me. is you don't have to break like a full box. In fact, you can just start and be like, hey, I'm going to break 5 packs out of this box. And
people,
then
people like it. People like the box.
I think you like it.
I also do. But that being said, because we do digress. But one of the things I want to say is that if you are a member of the You Get the Blank rookie card, I send you the cards that I break. I open them. And a lot of people, I do a little survey and you give me all of the information you have. And then I curate a package once a month to send you with all sorts of goodies, various things, not just cards, but cards and stickers and all sorts of random crap that I find. So it's like I get to make little personal care packages for you. So head on over to patreon.com/Jeff May, where you can get that, plus early access to uncensored episodes of Jeff Has Cool Friends, as well as shows like the Patreon exclusive Ugh Fine with Kim Kral, where every month we get into a fight and also
That's
go
true. All
months. But you can check that out. You can get Jeff Has Cool Friends for free. You can also have access to this show, Nerd, for free, or you can get it again at patreon.com/Jeff May. You can also see me on Unpopular Opinions, You Don't Even Like Sports Cards, and hear me on You Don't Even Like Sports, as well as on the Unpops show, Unpopular Opinion, both on the Unpops Network. And of course, Tom and Jeff Watch Batman on the Gamefully Unemployed Network. If you want to see me live, I am available the second Friday of every month at Blast from the Past in beautiful Magnolia in Burbank, California for Mint on Card. Other than that, I think did I cover them all, Dre?
I hope so. I didn't have my checklist.
I do.
Yeah, I was going to say the old Jeff May podcast becoming basically just Jeff plugs and then producers. That was the whole show. You could have almost done a like SNL bit where like you just do all your producers, do all your plugs. You're like, that's our show.
I like paring down the producers. That has helped greatly.
All right. Well, anyway, I'll just throw out at Nerd Numbers. Twitter as long as it's still around. I do the Box Score Geek show twice a week. That'd be way too much. Twice a month with Brian Foster. You can find that anywhere. You can find podcasts as the Box Score Geek show. And then I do pack breaking, but I'm not going to lie. That's for me. twitch.tv/nerdnumbers. But that's, as mentioned, just my governor on myself to keep myself from opening. One of these packs has gotten Isaiah Thomas at the beginning. Like, Jeff, these old things are ridiculous. They're like translucent at the front.
Right through them, yeah.
Yeah, ridiculous. Yeah. All right. Well, the good news for anybody listening, sorry to steal your spot, Jeff, but I'll finish it up. For anybody listening, we're going to have some bonus content. It'll probably be free at some point on the YouTube, but if you want it early, like, you can't wait to see people pack breaking Pokemon cards. Like, if you listened to an hour and a half of this, and then we're telling you we're going to pack break some Pokemon cards with Mewtwo on the front of the packs or on the box, on the front of the box. And you have the wherewithal to wait 2 weeks. Well, I just admire your self-control. So we'll get to that. And I'll let Jeff now guide how we're going to do that with the 3-camera setup, et cetera.
Well, for now, I'd like to say thank you all for listening to Nerd. We will be back next month where Dre and I are having a nice and healthy debate over what our next batch of episodes is going to be. But either way, I'm excited about what we're going to be doing. We've been going back and forth on it. Elise Golgowski, you were the perfect guest. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
I can't wait to rip with you. I can't wait to rip cards.
Oh, and sorry to keep this outro going a little longer. I got to throw a few things. Elise, you may be able to chime in. So for the seasons of Nerd, some of these have been organic. Like this one, we just decided. Jeff and I are like, we both love Star Wars CCG was such a perfect Venn diagram. We're like, we got to do that. And then I usually look for a theme for 3 episodes.
Yeah.
All I've got for next season is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. There was a short-lived MTV reality TV show called Final Foo with Ernie Reyes Jr. on it. And I was hoping to put those two together in a season somehow. The easy hook was Ernie Reyes Jr. But it is nowhere to be found, Jeff. So someone has to find this final.
It looks like you're speaking Greek to her right now.
Yeah.
I got three words out of what you just said.
That's fine. But we'll finish up. So there is a show called Final Foo that we are hoping to use for next season. Or I was hoping to use.
A reality show. Yeah, it was a reality competition, a martial arts competition show that was on MTV2 that lasted one season. I'm the only person who apparently liked it.
Yeah.
I think I would have liked it if I saw it. I think you're the only person who knows about it. There is at least a little bit of cursory Google proof that it does exist. So I wanted that, but that's impossible to do. So for next season, I wanted something with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, specifically Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2. For those that don't know, Jeff, he has talked about it for years. He has opinions, almost as divisive as if coins and dice belong in card games about that movie.
I do have opinions.
And I want to talk that. And I was looking for a theme. We could still maybe do Ernie Reyes Jr., but if anybody either has one of two things, anybody out there, if you're able to get us a copy of Final Foo in some format, we'll accept. If you're a former producer at MTV, then get us a flash drive. That is sufficient. Or if you have a good suggestion of a theme that involves Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, throw them in the comments and we'll figure something out for next series.
We'll figure. Yeah. Well, I have a couple ideas, but beyond that. Yep. Dre, thank you for facilitating this. You were great. Elise, thank you so much for being on the show. We hope to, we'll bring you back on for the next one. We'll be like, we're doing Polish stuff. And then we'll have you and pierogi on. But for those of you that are patrons, head on over to the YouTube and you can watch us break some packs. If you're not, hopefully you can see that by now, the time you're listening. But for now, bye everybody.
Thanks for listening to Nerd. If you want to help keep the podcast growing, it's definitely worth your while to head over to patreon.com/JeffMay. And also you'll get bonuses and early access to cool stuff. Cool stuff like videos of Jeff showing off awesome collectibles and doing pack breaking videos. It'd be worth your while to check out Jeff May's YouTube channel. That's youtube.com/@HeyThereJeffro. That's spelled J-E-F-F-R-O. And shocker, that is also his Twitter and Instagram account as well. So follow Jeff everywhere. You can find me most places on the internet as @NerdNumbers. Also, shout out to Chris Haugen for the outro theme of Pure Magic. Thanks so much, and we'll be back with another nerdy subject soon.